talk a little bit about today about tidal marsh restoration at Blackwater National Wildlife Refuge. The purposes of our research were twofold. One, we know that tidal marshes have a great potential to sequester carbon, and there's great interest in using that for carbon trading and regulation, which Brian Needleman will be talking about a little bit later today. And also, Blackwater National Wildlife Refuge has a plan to use dredge sediment from the Chesapeake Bay to restore marshes, and we want to track how that's going. Blackwater National Wildlife Refuge is located near Cambridge, Maryland. That's on what we call the eastern shore of Maryland. Can I use this? Oh, that works. So it's about over here. Washington, D.C. is here. This area has a lot of low-lying tidal marshes, but they've been disappearing at a great rate, especially within Blackwater National Wildlife Refuge. They've lost a total of about 8,000 acres and 150 to 400 acres lost a year. And this is due to things such as invasive species, nutria, saltwater intrusion. They have some hydrology issues they don't fully understand. And of course, sea level is rising. And sea level is rising at a pretty great rate in this area. So all of these stresses together are creating feedbacks that create open water, which makes a more erosive environment, and you lose more marsh, and so they've got a real problem. So in 2003, they did a pilot project they used locally derived sediment to restore a marsh. They used volunteer labor to plant some marsh species, and then within the year, they had a great looking stand of marsh vegetation. So in order for this restoration to be successful, they have to overcome all of those current stressors, and they have to accrete with sea level rise. So they have to put down new organic material to stay above sea level, or these marshes will just become submerged again. And this feeds into our second purpose of our research, because that accreted material, some portion of that organic material that is accreted, will end up as sequestered carbon. And so we wanted to look at these two phases of the restoration. So our ultimate research goals are to determine carbon sequestration rates in restored marshes, evaluate that across the soil profile, superficial versus deep, and develop a sampling protocol for validation, because people are interested in using restorations as a way to gain carbon credits. So for our preliminary analysis today, I'm just going to talk a little bit about the distribution of the restored and the reference marsh, and I'm going to try to sort of assess restoration and carbon sequestration without time zero data, because we don't have any data from when the pilot project was initiated. So our research design is that we have two tidal marsh cells, one newly created marsh, and one natural or reference marsh cell. The USGS went out and installed three SCTs, or sediment elevation tables, to track the surface of the marsh with time. These instruments drive a rod down into bedrock or stable material, and then they can track the surface of the marsh very precisely over time so that we'll know if it's truly accreting. And then to complement that data, we put 15 field putts per SET in a transect, which I'll show you in a moment, and we plan to sample these plots annually for soils and vegetation. Today I'm going to talk about organic carbon and bulk density. So this is the restored marsh design. The SETs are in red, and so we've set up transects, 3 or 15 for each SET, and then that's about 45 for each cell. We wanted to get both the interior and the exterior of the marsh, and we wanted to get a range of microtopography. So we wanted to sample quite a lot to see what the variation, how much carbon is out there, and what accretion rates might vary across the site. The reference marsh design, we set it up in much the same way, although variation in microtopography and marsh species is a lot less at the reference marsh location. And you might also notice that it's a bit smaller. So we collected cores in the fall of 2006 with a Macaulay peat auger. This collects a semicircle of known volume of soil material, lets us get bulk density. Cores were divided by horizon, or 25 centimeter increments if horizons were not apparent. We described them in the field non-destructively the best we could, and we weighed the bulk samples, determined moisture and bulk density content, and the remainder was fine ground and analyzed for carbon on Alico. So today I'm just going to talk about a few things that we found initially. The typical marsh soil profile shows you the differences between the reference marsh and the restored marsh. Talk a little bit about horizon averages, because there are differences even within similar horizons, and a little bit about the surface carbon deposition that we found initially. So a typical reference marsh profile has OI, OE horizons, somewhat to very little degraded organic material. Carbon percentages, this one's on the low side, it ranges from about 15 to 40% carbon, and bulk densities are low and very uniform, 0.1 to 0.2. Now, typical for the restored marsh is probably a misnomer. There is no such thing as a typical profile here. On our field designations, we usually found what we called sea horizons, mineral material with depth. In the intermediate depths, we found organic, presumably the original organic soil material, and then that was overlain with mineral dredge material, and then in some cases, we found what we identified as organic material on top, although it didn't always have a lot of carbon. The bulk densities, of course, range from what you would expect for an organic horizon, something around 0.2 grams per centimeter cubed, all the way up to what you would expect for a dense mineral horizon, 1.4 or more. So average carbon concentrations are actually greater in the reference marsh for each type of horizon. So for organic horizons, we tended to have more carbon on a concentration basis for all of the organic horizons and for A horizons that were found. And of course, mineral C horizons had very little carbon content, just as we would expect. Transition horizons were just those horizons that were transitional from A to C, or they were organic materials and mineral materials interbedded so finely that we couldn't separate them for sampling purposes. And that was actually, there was a fair proportion of horizons that we designated this way, that were really difficult to separate the, what we thought was dredge from what we thought was organic material. Bulk density, of course, is the opposite situation, where organic horizons have very low bulk density. They're lower in the reference marsh than they are in the restored marsh. That might be due to compaction from the dredge material. It may be due to the degraded nature of this marsh before the dredge material was put on. Without time zero data, it's hard to know. And of course, the transition horizons are intermediate between those mineral seas and the organic horizons. The average carbon density, when we've combined the concentration and the bulk density data, there's actually more carbon. We found more carbon in the upper meter of soil than in the restored marsh than we did in the reference marsh. And we found this across all types of horizons. And I don't have this presented here, but also when we sum to 1 meter of depth. So this tells us that there is a lot of carbon in this system. It's worth looking into what's going on. I'm not sure exactly, other than the fact that just the densities are greater. There's more carbon that's been packed in to each horizon. But this definitely warrants further research. So for a carbon sequestration calculation, we thought we could go identify the original dredge surface. And we thought maybe we can go and then identify the organic material deposited since restoration. This, of course, does not give us a full accounting of carbon sequestration. There are many, we're not looking at all of the pools that go into carbon. We're not looking at below ground deposition. We're not looking at inorganic, organic, dissolved carbon leaching out of the system. We just wanted to see if there are carbon inputs being put in. That's a good sign for restoration and carbon sequestration. It's a good sign that we're getting something, and it warrants for further research. So we thought if we could go back to our original field description, look at the organic horizons on the surface, and then track the carbon in those, see how much stuff has been deposited on the surface, and what's the nature of that material. Well, the one I just showed you was located closest to the shore, but on the exterior of this marsh cell, and we had about 10 centimeters of organic material. It's quite a lot. There's some other areas that had 16 centimeters of organic material. That doesn't seem very likely for 3 years of growth of vegetative material on the surface. But there could, of course, be inputs from tidal inundation and such. But then we found other areas where we had dredge material clear to the surface, and it didn't appear that there was any new material on the surface. And then we had other areas where it didn't even look like there was any dredge present. So finding one surface across the whole cell was difficult. And so just to illustrate that, the black circles are those where we found no dredge material present. The red circles are where we found dredge material at the surface, and then orange to green are different levels of dredge material. And as you can see, there's not a clear spatial pattern of what's going on here. We were able to talk to the Corps of Engineers that did the original restoration and found out that this area, if I can do this, and the lower crescent of the restored marsh was actually above mean high water when they did the restoration. So there was no dredge material applied there. So I wouldn't expect, there may very well be new deposition in that area, but we're not going to be able to track it over the top of our dredge material. So that still doesn't explain what's going on in the interior where there are areas with and without, but at least we know that there is some explanation for what's going on. So we didn't identify a regular surface. So to try to track what's going on, we used individual cores. And of course, we're going to have to make some pretty broad assumptions. We can assume that only organic material overlying the mineral dredge material is new deposition. So that mineral material we identified in the field as A, Cs, and we included those transition horizons that had Cs interbedded with organic material. And then only the C in the new surface horizon is potentially sequestered or deposited. So what this looks like is, averaged across all cores with dredge material, we have about 2.8 centimeters of new material over the top of the dredge. And that dredge material that's there has about 15% carbon, 0.14 bulk density, and of course it's been accumulating over 3 years. So we could say the carbon sequestered in that new material is about 1.8 megagrams per hectare per year. And of course this is averaged over all cores with dredge material, including the ones that have a big zero. So this, as I said before, does not include all of the carbon cycles. We know that there's more going on out there than we can measure. But since we don't have time zero data, and we're just trying to draw some conclusions and tell about the importance of what's going on with no time zero data and just 1 year of sampling, this at least tells that this is worth further research. It's worth going back. It's worth telling people we think we're getting something. We think restoration is working. We think there may be carbon sequestered in that area. So in conclusion, the soils in the restored marsh are quite variable and different from the reference marsh. Preliminary results indicate that 2.8 centimeters is being deposited, and that is 1.8 megagrams of carbon per hectare per year since the dredge materials were applied. Evaluation of carbon sequestration is difficult without time zero data, but deposition indicates that further study is warranted to see what the other carbon pools are and how they're developing with time. So with that, I'd like to acknowledge our funding and our collaborators and ask for any questions. Yeah, I didn't put the numbers on. I don't remember the exact, but there's a fairly wide confidence interval around that. I don't have the number.
How big was the dredge material in the places where you found?
It was incredibly variable. In places, it was, I have to think metrically. I would say, but in places, it was like 25 to 50 centimeters, and of the places, it was, most often, it was about 10 centimeters, which is much less than the Corps told us they put on. They told us they put on 10 or 2 feet of material, and we rarely found that.
Just so kind if you of that. Sampled that like 50 centimeters and 40 centimeters and 30 and so forth, did you see a linear or great relationship between carbon and thickness or something like that? I was just wondering if you use your 50 as your time zero instead of using,
I don't think so. I think it is just too variable. I haven't looked a lot at that, although I did try to plot out some with depth and try to figure, and I have transects on my walls and so I was trying to figure out what's going on, and I just don't think it's possible.
Which does your 1.77 compare to what you've seen in a typical marsh that was done over, like one of Martin's students or something?
Yeah, I actually left out, I should have said that's a little bit lower than what most studies in the area of carbon sequestration is, but it's within the range of what they found, actually. So, yeah.
Can you speculate why it's lower?
Why it's lower? Because we're not capturing below ground carbon sequestration. I mean, so there are other pools. Plant growth, I also didn't mention that plant growth, especially in the first few years after restoration, is extremely vigorous. I mean, it is marsh plants over your head. It's there's a lot of growth, and that's actually starting to taper off now. So.
Are you going to bigger methane blocks from the month? The cost side of carbon credit?
Right, of course. That's something that'll have to be accounted for in the carbon crediting, and I'm going to leave that to Brian in the regulatory talk to talk about. He's loving that.
All right. Any more questions?